it's truly a hidden valley, a special treasure. And, you know, no reason nobody knows about it. It's very hard to get to. It's southwest of Palomar Mountain, south of the Warners Valley, east of Escondido, north of San Pasquale Valley. And there's only one road in, and it's ringed by mountains. When you're standing in the valley, you can't see any modern development. This one only has one dirt road through the property with a few branches, one historic adobe, and the ruins of several others. The great stands of oaks, there's sycamore, so along the stream, and just full of wildlife. It's something that leaves an impression on you that when the first time you see it, that never leaves you. It's truly a lost part of California. It has to be saved. This is, if there's one place to make a stand in Southern California, this is absolutely the most pristine piece of Southern California between here and Santa Barbara that I know.
Good morning. I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of FM 94.9 and San Diego and all of Southern California, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. There aren't many undeveloped areas in San Diego County left in private ownership anymore. Development has all but eaten up the available open space here that isn't already in public or government holdings, but Rancho Juajito, located in North San Diego County, east of Escondido and south of Valley Center, is the exception. At over 22,000 acres in size, it's astonishingly huge. An enormous tract of land, originally known as Rancho Juajito y Cañada de Palomia, when it was granted to the Orozco family back in 1845 by the Mexican governor of the area. To paraphrase an article in the winter 2007 edition of the San Diego Save Our Heritage Organization magazine, Juajito means pebbles or small stream. Cañada de Palomia loosely translates into Glen of the Dove, from the same origin as nearby Palomar Mountain. So the history of Juajito Ranch goes back to the very beginning of California. While grazing has intruded upon its natural character over the years, and fire has burned it again and again, of the 800 Mexican-deeded ranchos recognized by the U.S. government, the Juajito Ranch is the only one whose boundaries are mostly intact, with its hills and valleys just as they were when the Orozco family received its grant in 1845. Today, the ranch is coming out of a long period of family ownership, and there's been talk of developing the land for homes and offices. With development slowly eating into the orchards and nurseries around the area, how long will it be before Rancho Juajito, referred to as the jewel of San Diego conservation, falls prey to development? And if it is developed, what can we expect? And how will this affect the natural character of the area? Well, joining us today to talk all about Rancho Juajito is our friend Bruce Coons, the executive director of the San Diego Save Our Heritage Organization. Bruce is also the author of the article that I was quoting just a moment ago. Also joining us today is the executive director of the Endangered Habitats League, Dan Silver, who's come all the way down from Los Angeles to be with us. So, Bruce, Dan, welcome to Tree Huggers International. It's great to have the two of you here.
Good morning, Tommy. Thank you for inviting us.
Good to be here.
Bruce, can you talk a little bit about the family which owns Rancho Juajito, and where is the ownership status right now?
Well, it was owned by Benjamin Coates, and now his heirs own the ranch, and it's been dispersed amongst his heirs. Benjamin Coates, when he owned it, we were pretty sure that it was going to be preserved because he thought it was one of the most beautiful places in the world. In fact, he told people when he was talking on the phone one time, he said, "I'm looking out on the most beautiful valley in the entire earth." And he's the man that owns land in Switzerland and Norway and beautiful valleys all around the world, but he thought this one was the best one. The current owners have been exploring the possibility of developing the plan, his heirs, and you know, it'd be a tragedy to be lost. Certainly Benjamin didn't want to have that happen.
So the property still is with the Coates family, correct?
It is.
The Orozco family owned it beforehand. Have there only been two owners historically of this property?
No, actually, there's been several. After Orozco, there was a a man named Kazarang, a real colorful individual, which eventually got in some barroom fights and other things. And eventually the PB and Cummings company were running cattle on it, who ran cattle on a number of the ranches in San Diego.
So is it fair to say that the current owners are shopping the property around to developers right now? Is that accurate?
What's accurate is probably to say that they are exploring the possibilities of developing the property. They are floating, you know, virtually plans for a new city. They were trying to see if they could annex themselves to the city of Escondido so they could develop it much more intensely than what the county would allow.
And Dan, at the risk of asking what might be a simplified question, what kind of flora and fauna make the ranch their home? And is the ranch an effective corridor for wildlife to move about in the area? Is it big enough to handle that?
It's all of those things and more. The ranch is a gateway from the coast to the mountains. It's a linkage from the lower elevations up to the higher. So it's this intermediate elevation valley. What's important about it is it's so big. About 20,000 acres. It's able to support types of animals that simply need big spaces, golden eagles, mountain lions. It also has very rare species. There's actually 66 rare threatened species, and there's endangered species like the arroyo toad and the Stevens kangaroo rat. It's a mosaic of habitats. It has oak woodlands, some of the finest Engelmann oak woodlands, which are very rare oaks, that we have in San Diego, grasslands, scrub, chaparral, and it's this mosaic that is so outstanding. Plus, it has streams. It has riparian habitat, wetland areas. It's big, it's intact, it's a wildlife corridor. It's all those things put together. What you have to understand about Rancho Ejido is that it's surrounded by the Cleveland National Forest. When you look at its ecological integrity, it's just tremendous because it's hooked up on three sides, basically, by public lands. So it's even much bigger than its own boundaries. And so the wildlife, they don't know the difference between the boundary lines, and that's what gives this property an enormous ecological integrity.
What would be the animals most threatened by any kind of development there?
I'd say the endangered ones would be the most threatened. The arroyo toad is an amphibian that's adapted to Southern California's unique environment, where streams dry up through most of the year. And this is an amphibian, a toad, that will actually forage for miles away from a stream. A remarkable animal. Stevens kangaroo rat needs sparse grasslands. Those two would be very, very threatened by development, and they're endangered already. They're on the federal endangered species list. Anytime you introduce development into a landscape like this, the biologists call it habitat fragmentation. It's breaking up something into pieces, and that basically destroys its integrity. And animals that are not compatible with human activity will vanish. They will be the first to go. The golden eagle, intolerant of human activity, you won't see it there anymore. What's most sensitive to the golden eagle is activity near a nest. And I'm not sure exactly the distance, but it's considerable. They will abandon a nest if there is activity within a certain radius.
There has been cattle grazing, and there is livestock there on the ranch, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of impact has that had on the native species there?
Over the decades and even centuries, there have been enormous changes in the native vegetation due to cattle and other factors, where many of the native grasses were displaced by non-native grasses. So this has happened all over California. But these non-native grassland communities still support many of the species that the native grassland supported, birds of prey, rodents, and so on. So the cattle are obviously not natural, but there is at least some level of compatibility with the cattle grazing. So over the long term, you might want to eliminate cattle, but there is also the ability to manage cattle sensitively, keeping them out of streams, for example, rotational grazing. It can actually continue as a working ranch, and that's still basically compatible with the wildlife.
And that's really remarkable that there's streams That's highly unusual, especially for a place as notoriously dry as San Diego's North County. That's amazing. Are there actual springs on the property?
Well, it's a very large drainage. It's I believe there are springs as well, but it's a very large drainage. It's sitting up on top of a plateau. It's truly a hidden valley, a special treasure. And, you know, no reason nobody knows about it. It's very hard to get to. It's west of Palomar, southwest of Palomar Mountain, south of the Warner's Valley, east of Escondido, north of San Pascual Valley. And there's only one road in, and now that gate's blocked. And it's ringed by mountains that are, most of them are within the land grant, but further back. When you're standing in the valley, you can't see any modern development. As important as Camp Pendleton is, there's development all over Camp Pendleton. It's bisected by roads and other things. This one only has one dirt road through the property with a few branches and one modern house and one historic adobe and the ruins of several others. Great stands of oaks, like Dan was talking about, and there's sycamore so along the stream, and just full of wildlife. It's something that leaves an impression on you that when the first time you see it, that never leaves you. It's truly a lost part of California.
And you mentioned some of the older structures there. Can you talk a little bit about the historical nature of some of those buildings?
There are ruins that date back to the 1840s, and there's locations of houses that are even earlier than that. The present Kazarang Adobe was built in the 1850s, but there's also another ranch that is incorporated in this property. The original rancho was like 12,000 acres, and they added another 8,000 to it later on, which was called the Vineyard Ranch. And on that ranch, there's the ruins of the old winery and the main house. It's not too far from where the new house is. Those are really extensive adobe ruins.
And you mentioned the winery, and I'd read about that in your article. Was that a functioning winery?
It was. During the 1880s, it was a major winery at the time.
Before we started recording, I think you mentioned you first visited the ranch in 1969. Is that correct?
I first visited it a few years before that. In 69, we were out there taking photographs and going on the ranch. And those are some of the photographs that are on our website that you can see.
And it hasn't even changed since then?
It hasn't changed, really. I mean, Dan talked about some of the physical changes because of the cattle, but the cattle have been there almost 200 years now, and it hasn't changed since the days of the early California during the Mexican period.
It's like going back in time. It's being transported back into a bygone era. We call it a time capsule. And it's apparently just a remarkable experience for those who have been lucky enough to be on the property.
Do you think potential developers might be concerned about the frequency of fire there? Would that be something they would take into consideration?
It hasn't seemed to stop any other developers in San Diego County. They seem to go right out into the mouth of danger all the time. So they don't seem to be. It's a little disconcerting. They're talking about all these developments being shelter-in-place developments now. It may have worked okay in this last fire because they were on the very fringes of the fire, but I hate to see one in the middle of one of these firestorms. I don't suspect they would have fared as well.
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International on KBZT, FM 94.9. I'm Tommy Howe, and joining us today is Bruce Coons, Executive Director of the San Diego Save Our Heritage Organization, and Dan Silver, the Executive Director of the Endangered Habitats League. And we're talking about Rancho Juajito in San Diego's North County. If you want some more information, you can go to Save Our Heritage Organization's website. That's sohosandiego.org or whaleyhouse.org, W-H-A-L-E-Y. You can also go to the website for the Endangered Habitats League. That's ehleague.org, ehleague.org. You can also go to savejuajito.org, and that's SAVEGUEJITO.org. At one point back in the 1970s, I think it was 1974, Rancho Juajito was slated to become a California state park, but the whole deal fell through. What happened with that?
The state never did come up with the money at the time, as I remember, and then it was sold to Benjamin Coates instead.
They had prepared a very detailed study, though, They had literally laid out the campgrounds. It was going to be an historic theme with the Mexican-American heritage, the working cattle ranch. They'd done detailed visitor studies, and then it was not purchased. We don't know exactly why, but it's certainly a tragedy that it wasn't.
What kind of benefits would a park at Rancho Ojito bring to the area, and is that a realistic possibility at this point?
I think so. Due to the size of the property, though, it's going to take the cooperation of the state, county, and probably the federal government to pull this thing off. But it has to be saved. This is, if there's one place to make a stand in Southern California, you know, there's plenty of good places, but this is the one at the top of the list, in my list, anyhow. This is absolutely the most pristine piece and the most beautiful piece of Southern California between here and Santa Barbara that I know of.
If the area is developed, would it be houses, or would they try and put a mall up there or something?
Well, they were talking about putting a university in and a town center and houses.
When I ask about what kind of benefits a park would bring to the area, are there economic benefits that might come out of that?
Oh, absolutely. Not only do we have the ecotourism, but we have heritage tourism. And Tourist Industry Association of America said almost 3 years ago now that 81% of Americans traveling that year visited cultural and historical sites. They stayed longer and spent more money than any other kind of tourism. So certainly economically, it would be a very large driver. But just for our psyches to know that there's a place like that, it's certainly one place that I keep going back to in my mind, and I'll never forget my experiences on being in that ranch. We need to have places like that. Lowers the blood pressure, give you a good reason to keep on going, to know that there are places like this.
And Dan, we are talking about the impact of cattle there and grazing. Has that resulted in a greater number of invasive species in that area? And if so, what can be done about them?
It has been a contributing factor to the replacement of the native grasses by the non-native. It's possible to restore native grasses. It's expensive. It's time-consuming. Sometimes prescribed burns are used, different techniques. Sometimes even cattle are used in a carefully managed way. But that's something over the longer term. I think the task, frankly, of our generation is to protect it from development. And I think future generations can think about the restoration.
What's been the role of the Endangered Habitats League in saving Ojito?
We've been trying to raise public awareness. We formed a coalition of groups and organizations. We have done a letter that was signed by 24 different organizations that we've sent to county supervisors and to every city council member in San Diego County. But it's mainly been public education at this point. We're also working in the general plan update process at the county level to keep the zoning of Rancho Ojito, basically the zoning of a cattle ranch, rather than as some kind of future development area, which is obviously completely inappropriate. And, you know, we talk now about smart growth. Well, this would be the dumbest growth you could imagine. So we're working through the general plan and through public awareness. And we'd love to work with the landowners on something that's mutually beneficial, a conservation easement, an acquisition, in a cooperative way to preserve the ranch forever.
Is zoning the key in that you want to keep it zoned for a certain type of activity and not a commercial activity? And if so, how do you keep the zoning from going from one to the other?
It's simply a matter of public policy. There's good planning principles that can be applied to the San Diego countryside in general. The San Diego countryside, you know, Ojito is the crown jewel, perhaps, but there's large areas of San Diego countryside which need proper zoning so that you have continued agriculture, continued scenic beauty, continued productive farmland, ranches, in conjunction with country towns, villages, places where people can live in rural areas. And all that's good, simply good planning, and that's one sort of policy decision that a local government can make. On the other hand, a local government has within its power to make bad planning decisions, which has often occurred in the past. And it's our job to make sure that the County of San Diego makes the right planning decisions. The good news so far is that the maps that we're seeing for the general plan update are pretty good for the countryside, including Rancho Ojito.
And Bruce, I first became aware of Ojito Ranch through an article in the Los Angeles Times, but also through the article that you wrote in the Save Our Heritage Organization magazine. Can you talk a little bit about researching that piece and how long it took you to put everything together?
I've been studying San Diego history since I was a child, and when you're, the ranchos are always a large part of it. There was an article in the San Diego Union back in the mid-60s that talked about the ranch, and I said, I just had to see the ranch. So I've been studying it for quite some time, picking up any of the books that I could. It's in quite a few books, you know, historic ranchos of San Diego County and some old adobes and ranchos and a number of other ones. And so there's quite a bit of history about that. And the Valley Center Historical Society has been doing a lot of research on it lately, and I think they have an exhibit at their facility in Valley Center as well. It was going out there is what made the impression. You know, I visited all the ranchos and pretty much most of Southern California, virtually all the existing adobes, but this place is special.
You know, I often see Rancho Ejido mentioned in the same sentence as Rancho Santa Margarita. Why are those two often mentioned together?
Well, the real Rancho Santa Margarita, the town that's named Santa Margarita, is part of Rancho Mission Viejo, and the real Rancho Santa Margarita is Camp Pendleton, and that's why they get mentioned together, because Camp Pendleton is, you know, our major buffer between us becoming Orange County. Everybody can see its resources, most of them from public roads or have been on the base. But Santa Margarita y Las Flores, which is the whole name, is an incredibly important landscape that the Marines are maintaining now. This one is probably a step above because it is so pristine. But they're both really, really important.
You know, because it's so difficult to go and see Rancho Ejido, do you think there'd be a greater awareness of it? And do you think there'd be a greater awareness of the need to save it if you could actually access it and go see it?
Absolutely. It's San Diego County's absolute best-kept secret. It is hard for people to understand what a treasure it is without actually standing in it, and then there's no contest. It hits you right upside the head. Virtually the only way people can see it now is that they're flying up the coast and in a commercial or other airliner, you can look out to the east. You can't miss it because it's the only huge piece of undeveloped property out there. If you look northeast of Escondido, you can see it there. The only way the public can really see it now is there's a couple of fire roads and some of the ridges that you can get into off of some of the truck trails south of Lake Wolford. But other than that, it's really difficult to see in. They used to have a county road in the middle of it, but the county in its infinite wisdom decided they would turn that over to the landowner a number of years ago, and so now you can't get past the gate, which is well before you can really see the valley. There's actually two major valleys and several small valleys.
Dan, what would you like to see be the ultimate conclusion to this story? How do you want to see Rancho Ejido end up?
I would like to see us form a partnership with the landowners, working cooperatively. I think that's really, really important. I'd like to see them made whole for the value of the land, and it's going to be a big price tag. We don't know how big, but it's going to be big. And I think in an ideal world, we would actually go back and do the state park that we didn't get done in 1974. Alternatively, it could be a state ecological reserve. It could be a national wildlife refuge. There's a number of different conservation scenarios. Another scenario that works is simply for the family that's living there now. I think they live there part-time. To continue to live there, continue to ranch it, and simply use a tool that's called a conservation easement, where the land is protected from development, but there's still use by the owner, just like before. So all of those are really good options. I think, again, it's our mission, I think our responsibility to save it from development. That is the mission that we have before us. And there's many different ways you can do it, and I might pick one or the other. But frankly, you know, I'll take whichever one works out. We're in the middle of doing a public outreach program. We have some brochures printed. We have some speakers who are available actually to give presentations to community groups. And if any one of your listeners knows about a community group, an organization, a civic organization, a club, anything like that, I'd certainly like to know, and we'll get in touch with me, and we'll get a speaker out to give a PowerPoint slideshow to your group. Contact me directly, and I'll just give you my phone number. It's 213-804-2750.
That's 213-804-2750 for Dan with Endangered Habitats League.
I think I was just so amazed that you really couldn't see any development. You know, growing up in Southern California, you can't get away from it. Even when you go up to the mountains or the valleys, you still see some kind of development. I think what most impressed me was just these wide vistas through these valleys with the ridgetops uncluttered, with the historic buildings still there. In fact, when I saw it, there was no new house yet. There were no new buildings on the property at all. Like I said, there's only one now. But then to see all the wildlife running all over the place in front of the car and down the streams and see the water flowing. And it was very green when we were out there in springtime. And there were flowers everywhere.
You saw mule deer?
Yeah, we saw herds of mule deer crossing the roads. It wasn't like any other place that I'd seen. I spent a lot of time in the backcountry and a lot of time off-road and in Baja. But this was a special place, and it made a major impact. I don't know anything else like this. This is like walking back in time.
Whenever we talk about Rancho Juhito, the word legacy comes up over and over. Whoever can help create this, and there's going to be, I think, a role for public officials, for individuals, for groups. It will be an enormous legacy. The other thing I would like to add is that it's a sacred site for Native Americans. There's a lot of Native American cultural history there, artifacts, historic villages, and indeed it's a sacred site for the Native American religions. And there are Native American groups that we are working with as part of our preservation effort.
If you could only do one thing in life and you thought it was important to preserve the environment, and hopefully we won't be able to do only one thing, but this would be the place to preserve. This would be the legacy of a lifetime.
Bruce Coons from the San Diego Save Our Heritage Organization, Dan Silver from the Endangered Habitats League. Really appreciate having you guys on the program today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming by and talking about Juhito Ranch, and hopefully we'll have a good ending for this story.
Yes.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International on FM 94.9. Many thanks to Bruce Coons and Dan Silver for coming by and talking about the Juhito Ranch. If you'd like to learn more about Rancho Juhito and efforts being made to keep it free of development, go to the Endangered Habitats League website at www.ehleague.org. That's www.ehleague.org. And you can contact Dan at the Endangered Habitats League if you'd like more information at area code 213-804-2750. You can also learn more about Rancho Juhito at the websites for the Save Our Heritage organization at sohosandiego.org. That's www.sohosandiego.org. Another website you can use is whaleyhouse.org. As in the Whaley House in Old Town, W-H-A-L-E-Y, www.whaleyhouse.org. And you can call the Save Our Heritage organization at area code 619-297-9327. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media, and as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, go ahead and email me at tommy@fm949sd.com. For more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, you can go to the Tree Huggers International page at the FM 94.9 website, www.fm949sd.com/treehuggers. Or just go to the FM 94.9 homepage and click on the Tree Huggers International logo. Again, it's Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 5:30 with another take on natural science and environmental affairs in our corner of Southern California. But in the meantime, get ready for another edition of Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation on the way next on FM 94.9. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.